Welcome, everybody, to All About Symbian. This is Insight podcast number 136. It's Friday, the 24th of September 2010, as we record it. I'm Steve Litchfield. As always, in Sussex, I have
Rafe Blanford.
And up in Edinburgh,
Ewan Spence. Hello.
Yeah, you forgot where you were for a moment. And up in Hull,
it's David Gilson. Hello, everyone.
Yes. So you'd like to forget where he is for the moment.
Oh, don't be like that. Everyone scorns Hull. It's not fair.
It's got a nice bridge.
Anyway, you three were all at Nokia World 2010 last week. I couldn't get there for family reasons, very sadly, but there was so much video and photography and commentary coming out of the event. I really almost felt like I actually had been there. There's a wealth of information on the internet. We've linked to an awful lot of it on allaboutsymbian.com, including embedding a number of videos. But you guys, if I could just go around the table briefly, maybe you, and starting with you, what was your big takeaway from Nokia World 2010? What's your final summary of it?
I think it's the simple fact that Nokia came out swinging and fighting and were actually quite aggressive. Now, I don't know whether that's just because of, you know, the whole sort of problems that they'd had the week before with people resigning, being asked to leave and so on and so on. But there was, I mean, certainly when Nicholas came out to do the keynote address, which he was never intending to do, it was obviously going to be OPK still about 2 weeks ago, he was certainly like quite aggressive. And that's really unusual in a Finn. I mean, I think the only Finn I've ever seen aggressive is Kimi Raikkonen when he has to sit at a Grand Prix and you see him eating an ice cream. You know, that's aggressive for a Finn. Ansi obviously had his own reasons for getting a little bit of fire in the belly in the presentation. But just the idea that, you know, they were happy to throw the numbers back out. They were happy to say, look, we are bigger than that. And yeah, okay, some people are going to come off, oh, that's a bit childish. You know, but for years we've been saying to Nokia, will you please promote yourself? And this is a strong first step, I think. Now, obviously, this has to be balanced off. But, you know, the Finnish Zizou, I think, will naturally balance that off in any case. But I just like the general attitude that the company had. And also, they finally got to show what they were doing. You know, it's almost like, you know, this is it. We can show you what we've got now. Look at this. It's nice. Na, 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 na.
And the back, of course, which was their main slogan, I guess. David, this was your first Nokia World ever. What was your final takeaway from the conference?
Well, with it being my first one, I didn't really have anything to compare against. I was impressed with the whole show. I thought it was all very well done. And everything made sense to me. It seemed as if they were just carrying on a pace with everything that's been in the news over the last 2 months. Of course, OPK and Van Jockey leaving were surprises. But, all the while I was there, all the announcements, to me, there was no surprises. Everything just made sense. And it was good to see everything officially announced and, like, all these leak photos clarified. And so, yeah, it was very good. And also, I think my personal favourite thing was enjoying seeing the future technology. That was really good. I'm looking forward to seeing how they work out.
Yeah. There's always a danger at these events that everything makes glorious sense when you're there, surrounded by all the marketing people and all the demos, and then you get home and you think, hang on a minute. Rafe, what was your final takeaway from the conference?
Well, as you know, I've been to quite a few Nokia Worlds. One of the things that struck me here was the sort of level of enthusiasm, which I think maybe it's been fair to say has been missing in the last few years. That's both in terms of the attendees. I think this was particularly noticeable amongst the developers. When I was wandering around bits of the developer summit and talking to developers, there was a surprising degree of enthusiasm about the new Qt tool chain, about the new platform with Symbian 3, and a great deal of optimism about how Nokia had worked with developers and had improved OviStore. And very few of them had, you know, any real criticisms. They, you know, of course there were the things about improving OviStore in terms of re-downloads or wanting bigger revenue shares. But they said, you know, largely Nokia is listening, it's doing things, and, you know, we feel that we have a better relationship than with any others. And so that kind of developer enthusiasm, clearly you're going to get a certain amount of that at a Nokia event. But it was, I think, a contrast to what had gone before for me. Similarly, with the Nokia staff, there were a lot of very proud Nokia staff showing off the new demos, particularly of the new handsets. And I think that's probably the big takeaway for me. You know, Nokia at this event came out with three new Symbian 3 devices. If you add in the N8, they're sort of the awesome foursome, as I heard them referred to on a couple of occasions. Yeah. And for me, that was quite telling, because what they had here were four devices that are all potential bestsellers were all potential hero devices. That's something that very rarely happens from any company, and I don't think we've seen that from Nokia for a while. You know, you look at each of the devices, and yes, of course, there are areas where, you know, you raise your eyebrows or a few question marks, but they were remarkably solid across the board in terms of things like build quality, design. The actual software running Symbian 3 has faced a lot of criticism from people just looking at the screenshots. But for those who actually played with the device and had a go, you know, talking to, you know, friends in the media, both from the US and from Europe, you know, they were pleasantly surprised by Symbian 3, you know, being above their expectations. Now, we've been talking about this for the last year, and so it was great to see, you know, a lot of the ideas that have been talked about in Symbian 3, and also to a lesser extent with the Qt side of things, actually become available on the handsets. And that was reflected in some of the services as well, in terms of Ovi Music going DRM-free, the upgrades to the developer side of things, you know, the newest version of Ovi Maps. And so that sense of optimism was really there, that, you know, this Nokia fight back that got talked about wasn't just talk. You know, there was a real concrete, you know, something to back it up. You know, it's talk is cheap, but it did feel like Nokia is on the cusp of producing, you know, products and services that start to, you know, join together. Now, clearly, as you have perhaps already hinted, you know, you do get into the bubble of the event. I think, Steve, you said that as well. But, you know, reflecting afterwards, I do think, you know, Symbian are now very well, Nokia very well poised going forward for the next few months. It will take a while to kick in because obviously these devices are a few months away. But certainly, I think I have reason to be much more optimistic about Nokia's future going into 2011 than I think you would have done if you'd looked 6 months ago, say, at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, and I just wanted to just chip in as just as a compliment to all the Nokia staff who I spoke to, because as I said, this was my first Nokia World, so I didn't really have anything to compare against. But what Rafe said about how just infused everybody was absolutely right, and it was actually a great pleasure just to talk to everyone there, and you actually got the sense of enthusiasm and optimism from everyone. So yeah, thanks everyone.
Yeah, and just to add to what David said there, one of the most telling comments, which I heard from several people, was it's great, you know, these are phones that I can be proud of, you know, from the Nokia staff, but also from, you know, developers and people who might be considered fans of the Symbian platform, you know, saying great, these are phones that I can recommend that a friend would buy without any sense of embarrassment, because clearly with the Symbian One devices, the touch devices, there have been some concerns about usability and user experience. You know, we've gone over and over these on the podcast, but these Symbian 3 devices, both in the mid-tier and at the high-end, are right at the cutting edge in terms of technology. Now, people are still going to look at the Symbian 3 platform and there'll be some question marks, but for the vast majority of people, this is going to give an experience that is a significant step up from what they'll have seen from a Nokia smartphone before. And actually, that's probably the most telling announcement. You know, I had interviews with various Nokia executives and I did hear the message over and over again that this isn't necessarily about attracting iPhone and Android users, although clearly that's going to be a good thing if it happens. I think it's probably fair to say this Symbian 3 upgrade in device portfolio isn't necessarily going to be what does it, particularly with regard to the States, but it is going to be incredibly attractive to the existing Nokia customer base, and that's actually much bigger than anything else. That's, you know, we're talking 3.1 billion people. That's overestimating, but certainly hundreds of millions who will be looking at upgrading to a smartphone and have used Nokia and are looking at Nokia again, compared to, you know, it's actually tens of millions, maybe 100 million people who are on competing smartphone platforms. So I believe Nokia's made the right decision in going after that market, which is the bigger one, and in one sense is the lower hanging fruit first. And that's something else that I got out of Nokia World. You know, this is Nokia appealing to its customer base, and that's a very good thing to see.
And not only is it appealing to the customer base, we have to remember that Nokia still has to sell phones every day, every week, every month, every year. They are an ongoing business concern. For them to make such a huge jump that Symbian 1 to Symbian 4 would have been is actually incredibly risky, especially for a company that takes small, measured steps. Symbian 3 is a stepping stone. It sorts out the sort of back end, the QT, the developer story, and gets them working, while it leaves that more tricky front end. It gives it one more iteration. Symbian 3 which Symbian 3 was dropped. It's just Symbian now in all the presentations, which is an interesting presentational point. Has been simplified and rationalized. And I know we said, oh, once you make it one click, it does it through. But it is much smoother. It is much faster. It does feel snappier. And the clear black display of the screen, allowing lots of Spinal Tap references to be made from ANSI, it really does help to the two devices that carry it. Nokia have made a very good intermediate step here. They're going to keep all their existing customers, I think, on board. So in terms of churn, this has drastically reduced the churn that we've seen 6 months ago. Does it allow them to drive forward? Not yet. But even if they just go up just a little bit, if they go up to 270,000 units a day, 280,000 units a day, it's hard to see Android or Apple even getting up to parity on those sales. So, you know, Android's the more likely to do that, but I don't see them overhauling Nokia within 12 months. And in 12 months' time, Symbian 4 hits, you have the new interface, you've got people who've seen things like the N8C7, C601, and went, you know, these are good devices from Nokia. Oh, they've reworked the operating system again. That's when the new people come into a fold. It's a very measured and sensible strategy that balances the drive forward, the technology, and the flashy stuff with ongoing business concerns that other companies might not have.
I think that's right, Ewan. And I think even here, we're perhaps underplaying the significance of the Symbian 3 devices. I think, you know, it is a case of you really have to try them out to kind of get the thing here. You know, Symbian 3 has been seen for quite a while amongst the sort of All About Symbian community and the wider kind of web technology community as being an iterative step from Symbian 1. And I think actually that's not really true. You know, Symbian 3 for me is a bigger step up than it was from S63rd edition to S65th edition. A lot of the user experiences which are, lie outside UI, and that's things, you know, that Ewan was mentioning about connectivity, performance, you know, one click, etc., etc., are in Symbian 3, and Symbian 4 is really a UI brush up. And, you know, whether we see it in Symbian 4 and Symbian 5 in Nokia devices remains to be seen. But I would just, I think it's probably worth taking away from Nokia World that actually Symbian 3 is a much bigger deal than most people have been treating it in terms of it being a radical departure from what we've been used to before. It's hard to get this across because visually, if you just look at the screenshots and to a certain extent the videos, you don't see that. But it really is a step change in performance terms and the functionality of what you can do with the devices. And you see that in, you know, some of the functionality like the HDMI out, like the HD video, like USB on the go, like the pentaband 3G radios, and there's, you know, plenty more smaller scale down the line. And so if there was one message, you know, take away from it, you know, don't see Symbian 3 as just the stepping stone. I think it's actually a lot more than that.
Yeah. Well, just moving away from Nokia temporarily, I would want to go into some Sony Ericsson news, but it turns out it's possibly slightly negative Sony Ericsson news, at least in terms of the short term. Nytechnik, a weekly Swedish technology newspaper, has reported that Sony Ericsson's new CTO, the chief technical officer, saying, quote, "The company has no plans for new products with Symbian." What we think and we interpret this to mean that Sony Ericsson aren't planning any Symbian 3 handsets, and they might sort of jump Symbian 3 and go straight to Symbian 4, which means they can just tackle the you know, the Qt development and the new Orbit UI rather than using the old-fashioned sort of S60 Avcon UI. Is that a fair summary, Rafe? Are we expecting Sony Ericsson to produce Symbian 4 sometime early next year?
Well, this has been a statement that's come out by reporting in the media rather than official statements, so it's really uncertain as to exactly what this means here. Sony Ericsson had said earlier they would be reviewing their platform options and have said that for 2011 Android is the kind of their main game, if you like, but they would be looking at Windows Phone 7 and also Symbian. And last official announcement was that they were still considering all three, and you know, officially that hasn't changed, but clearly with this news, you know, the question comes up, you know, what is going to happen to its Symbian device portfolio? And I think it's still an open question. I mean, it is notable that Sony Ericsson is still actively involved in the Symbian Foundation, which obviously you wouldn't expect them to do if they were abandoning Symbian altogether. So I think the answer here is probably the, you know, the decision hasn't been definitively made, but I certainly wouldn't expect Sony Ericsson to be producing Symbian devices anytime in the next 6 months. And so you'd probably have to look towards the latter half of next year and perhaps even 2012 to see them coming back. But this is all very much speculative and sort of based on some assumptions. So until we hear a bit more from them officially, I think it's difficult to, you know, draw an absolute conclusion to this.
Yeah, and I've got a kind of a controversial viewpoint on this, but it's certainly bad news that a manufacturer is pulling out of the, well, not pulling out of, but isn't going to actively participate in Symbian at the moment. But I had a concern when Symbian went up and SOS, because of the EPL, the Eclipse Public License. There are provisions in place to make sure that certain guidelines have followed when other manufacturers start rewriting Symbian a little bit and modifying it for their own ends. But I was concerned that there was, because of the way the license works, there was a potential, just a potential, for Symbian to be fractured in a similar way to how Android currently is. So the silver lining on this is that we're just going to have Symbian and Nokia contributing code to the Symbian project. So we're still going to have like a consistent Symbian out there that everyone will know and love, or in some cases love. So I think there is a positive for this for now, and hopefully maybe when Symbian 4 is more established, other manufacturers will get in there because it'll be looking cool and we'll want to use it, but maybe hopefully not mess about with it too much.
Yeah, just very briefly there, David. I mean, we've talked about this before. I actually think the sort of copyleft provisions in EPL and the way that the governance of the Symbian Foundation is set up would have actually restricted or prevented that kind of fragmentation. But in one sense, you're right. You know, it does make things simpler. I think the fragmentation we'll see will actually more likely come from the kind of Fujitsu and NTT Docomo side of things. We're not going to be seeing a unified platform in that sense running on the Symbian phones in Japan. And also, I think it's probably worth saying at this point that actually the real impact of Sony Ericsson and both Samsung, we had this news from them earlier in the month about not being involved in the Symbian Foundation. Real impact is pretty minimal. Sony Ericsson and Samsung weren't contributing any meaningful amounts of code to the Symbian Foundation. And as I said in the news post on the site, it's more a political concern than anything else and raises questions about the future structure of the Symbian Foundation, at least in my mind.
And actually, yeah, with the development work that the other manufacturers like Sony Ericsson or Samsung could do, personally, I'd much rather see them concentrate on service layers rather than working on the core Symbian code. I think it'd be good if we had like a diversified service layer. I think that would make things a lot more interesting in the market.
Yeah. You had a few thoughts on this.
I do, yes. Let's be honest. Sony Ericsson haven't made a standout Symbian device for quite some time. And being really evil, you know, are we going to miss it in the handset market? Probably, but not to a huge extent. David, I think we already have fracturing. The fracturing isn't happening at the Symbian OS level. It's happening at the services level, as you rightly point out. People getting S60 at the moment on a Samsung don't have the Obi Store. They don't have Obi Maps. You know, Nokia have built that split slightly higher up. So while the underlying operating system is still open, and I think because of that reason, it will stay pretty consistent no matter how many people get involved, you still have a problem higher up with that services layer. What is going to be interesting now is all these people that are screaming Nokia should switch to Android. Let's come back in 12 months' time and see how well Sony Ericsson switched to Android have done. The fact that they've ceded the control of a lot of the social stuff, of, you know, they'll be using Gmail, they'll be using Google Maps, they'll be using a lot of that service stuff. Sony Ericsson have now said, you know, we're no longer concerned about software, we're just going to shift boxes. We're just going to shift boxes in the same sort of breath as HTC. And I suspect that in that sense, HTC are far stronger, far better company than Sony Ericsson. This is essentially Sony Ericsson stepping back to the plate and going, you know what? We just build stuff. We can't write stuff. We can't do everything. We don't have that holistic approach anymore. We're going to hand all of that over to Mountain View, let them make their $10 per user off the advertising, and we're just going to do branded boxes, and everybody will search for Android rather than search for Sony Ericsson. I think it's a bad misstep from Sony Ericsson to go with Android and cede that much control. And it's going to be a perfect case in point of why large manufacturers should be wary of Google.
All right, okay, and I actually agree with you. So here's one for you.
Careful now, don't make that into a habit on the podcast.
So 2 years down the line, Symbian, well, Nokia, but more importantly, Symbian, have win back some sort of cool factor in the market, and the American press are talking more favourably about them. What's the potential of a HTC Symbian handset?
I don't think there's a huge potential of an HTC Symbian handset for the simple reason that HTC are very much focused on doing the best Android experience possible because they can focus on the hardware. What I think we will see, and I'm sure Rafe will have some comment on this area, is that if Symbian are smart, they will make sure that the Symbian platform is available to every single warehouse in China that's churning out handsets, to every Far East company that makes white box technology. And they just go, here's Symbian, there you go. It really is free, and you can put whatever services you like on top of it to do the value add. You know, that's where HTC started going on. There are so many of these companies out here that really Symbian Foundation should be making sure that they can get on every single device coming out of the Far East. I think that's where the true value and that's where the growth will be.
Yeah, I think you're right there, Ewan, in terms of HTC. You know, Symbian's problem is and always has been, how does another manufacturer compete with the scale of Nokia within the Symbian ecosystem? And the Symbian Foundation was meant to try and level the playing field a bit there, but it's been quite evident from the last year or so that that hasn't really happened. I think you may see some of the smaller manufacturers, particularly as Ewan suggests there, out in Asia, perhaps Huawei or ZT or someone like that, come up with some operator-branded Symbian handsets. But that's obviously going to wait for Symbian 4 and Symbian 5 and the future, I think, before anything like that happens. And I wouldn't rule HTC out of anything. You know, Android probably worrying them by wanting to take control of the UI more than they want to, especially given HTC's investment into the Sense technology. Similar things happening with Windows Phone 7. Again, they're trying to apply Sense onto Windows Phone 7. And so they may look at it and say, you know, what's the strategic imperative in a couple of years' time? So I wouldn't rule anything out. But certainly at this point in time, no, I wouldn't expect HTC to do anything. You know, they're going to be competing with Sony Ericsson and Motorola to become, you know, the primary Android manufacturer. And as we've suggested before, that's perhaps not a race you particularly want to be in. Not only are there several entrants in it, I mean, Google is kind of the looming shadow above it all that has a stake in it that isn't perhaps always in the interest of the manufacturers concerned.
Now, Nokia are dishing out the dollars in America, apparently. It's always good to seed the development community with a few incentives. So $10 million worth in this case, plus various devices. Ewan, you've got the details.
I know. Fresh off of offering $1 million to the winner of Calling All Innovators that it got announced at Nokia World, where Stephen Ellop was quite happy to shout, developers, developers, developers. The US version has popped up now with a $10 million of value of prizes. Essentially, this is a way for Nokia to say, developers, look, we're coming to America. We're coming with a device that's a bit like the N8, and we're going to be there in the start of 2011. In all likelihood, it's probably going to be with AT&T, who are partnering with Nokia with the contest, and it's probably going to be announced at CTIA. It's a tough one because they say the device is about $400, so possibly a C601 or a North American variant. But in any case, what they're essentially saying to developers is go out, write stuff, put it on the Ovi store. Whichever gets the most downloads or the most income coming out of there, and is also there's a judges portion set as well, these people will be the winners. And there's like 500 devices that are up for grabs for the winners. The top three in each section in the Ovi store that enter are going to be doing that. There's prizes in the main categories from $25,000 as a check all the way up to $150,000. The winning entrants will feature in TV marketing campaigns and online ad spends, which will come up to a value of about $1.9 million. So there, you know, there's a lot of investment going on here.
Now, staying with developers, Nokia have announced the official release of Qt 4.7, which sounds a bit boring, but in actual fact, it's not just the latest version of the cross-platform application framework, the thing that's going to be most applications for Symbian 3, 4 and upwards are going to be built on, also for MeeGo. It's also the very first formal release. It's the first stable release point. And there's also a couple of extras. Now, I gather the mobile version, the version actually lets you build for devices, isn't quite available yet, Rafe, but there's also a key addition, something that's brand new we haven't seen before. What's that?
Yes, that's right. What you're talking about there is the basis of Qt Quick, which is going to be a way of creating user interfaces very quickly and where designers and developers are going to be able to cooperate together, so in an iterative process to improve the UI. So what you can really expect to see here is slicker UIs in due course. Now, as you rightly mentioned, it's not quite available for mobile devices yet. Symbian 3 ships with Qt 6.4, I think it is. Migo will actually ship with Qt 4.7. So for the Symbian 3 devices, it's not going to be ready straight away, and that's reflected in the fact that the Nokia Qt SDK is not 4.7 ready yet. We are just talking about the matter of a few months, and actually developers, if they really want to, can start using the features now. It will be, as I say, formally supported shortly, but the big deal, as you say, is Qt Quick, and there's also some performance improvements in things like Qt WebKit, which is the web rendering component of Qt, and is actually going to be used in a lot of applications, both by Nokia and, I think, third-party developers as well. It's a way of quickly creating applications. You can sort of do a hybrid Qt web application using that particular bit of technology. But I just think it's worth picking this out in the podcast here, because this is, you know, becoming the native or the main developer tool for both Symbian and Migo, and therefore very important going forward. And so developers who want to get a head start and start looking at the new APIs available can go and download the SDK now and sort of, you know, get an introduction to it. But in terms of actual, you know, coding in the Nokia Qt SDK, that will be just a little bit further away.
Yeah. Now, the Nokia's OBVIOUSSTORE team got us all excited a week or so back. They put up a big blog post saying, now, this is the new version of the OBVIOUSSTORE. It's sleeker, it's faster, it's better. And then we realized it was only for Symbian 3 devices. And it's not exactly clear yet whether it will be backported to Symbian 1S 65th edition. But just to summarize the changes, the one major change is that there's a huge, big facelift. And they've got different icons along the top, control icons for the main interface. And some of the more esoteric options are now down at the bottom of each page. It's also apparently faster and slicker, of course helped by running on Symbian 3 with more RAM and faster processors and so on. There's also an in-application purchasing you, and you wanted to just comment on that.
So in-app purchasing, which was demoed in the keynote on the stage from the developers Rovio, who are behind Angry Birds, is going to be available on the new Symbian platform alongside the new client, which has those new changes, which basically make for a much better, smoother customer experience. Now, the other big change that was going on there with the in-app purchasing was also carrier billing as well, which is now, right, 35 countries and about 74 different
operators.
Networks.
That's right.
And I was really amazed by the fact that even more people are buying applications when carrier billing is there than just putting in their credit card details into the OBVIOUSSTORE. Some people are reporting differences in up to 80% in terms of transaction stickiness.
Well, the developers I spoke to, I think the average came out about three or four times more transactions with operator billing than credit card. But in some cases, it was as high as 13 or 14 times. Now, the reason for this is because in some countries, credit cards just aren't very common. Germany's a good example where I think ownership of credit cards is only around 30%. And that also applies, of course, to some of the more emerging markets. And for a lot of people, it is a lot easier just to say, right, fine, put that on my operator bill. It's also worth pointing out here, Ewan, of course, that the other big thing that Nokia announced in terms of operator billing was the consolidation of pricing. It's always been the case that Nokia would do a 70-30 split after the operator had taken their share, if you like, and that could change a lot. So some operators would take 50%, leaving actually a pretty small percentage for the developer, and some took less than that. So what Nokia said is, we're going to consolidate all of these billing, you know, differences for you. You will get 60% of the, you know, purchase price of the application will go to you. The other 40% will be used to pay off the operator or be part of Nokia's share. And actually, I spoke to Nokia, and they said in most cases, Nokia will be making little or no money here. And in some cases, with some operators, will actually be subsidising the cost of the operator fees, i.e., you know, the operators are actually charging more, but Nokia is balancing it out. And I think having a clear, you know, quote, if you like, 60-40 is much better than having different numbers for each of those operators. It should make things much clearer for developers so they can get their pricing right and get it absolutely right in terms of that. And obviously, when it's being a big revenue add, you know, actually becoming more significant than purchases from credit cards, you know, that is significant. And it's worth pointing out here as well that this is something that's unique to Nokia, this operator billing. No one else does it on such a global basis, you know, such a widespread of markets. You know, the Android marketplace is still restricted, I think, to about 9 or 10 countries, and that's mainly credit card billing with 1 or 2 operator billing implementations. And, of course, the iPhone, the App Store, that's entirely credit card billing. And so this isn't, you know, something that gets talked about much, but Nokia actually has a superior payments platform for its mobile application store than anyone else on the market.
I'm also expecting the addition of in-app billing to be a huge revenue stream for developers as well. I'm reminded of one of my favorite iPhone applications, which is Flower Garden, where you grow your own flowers, you cut them, and you can send them out again. Now, this, by the guys over at Snappy Touch, was doing about $50 a day in sales before it added in in-app purchasing in terms of revenue of people buying it. When in-app purchasing was added, so you could buy more seeds and more compost, is now averaging $1,500 a day. Mostly through in-app purchasing, a huge jump up for essentially the same application. But by making it sticky and easy to do, even in the iPhone App Store, he saw a huge jump up in sales. Now, you add that into the Ovi Store, but with carrier billing on top of that as well. So you just press a button in an application and it will appear on your bill at the end of the month. That's a huge revenue stream. That, you know, I said earlier, follow the money for developers in the developer contest. It's follow the money in the App Store. Nokia, I don't think, can make it any easier for developers to earn money.
Talking of applications and Q, which we were the last couple of stories, just a couple of final small stories I wanted to fit in before we finish on this podcast. The X Factor application, which I know you and Strike, because you wrote an article on it, but I also tried it. This is kind of a tie-in with a talent contest, or talent in quotes, I guess, contest in the UK. Nokia have heavily sponsored it with TV spots. There's also this unique application available in the Ovi Store for Nokia touchscreen phones. It's implemented in Qt, and I tried this out on the 5530, which I've got here. And it's a fairly horrific experience, actually. Just before I let Ewan jump in, you start off by downloading. Okay, that's fairly quick. It takes the usual 10, 15 seconds. But then it grinds into, okay, it notices you haven't got the Qt runtime on your device, which 99% of people watching the program and trying it out on the Nokia phone won't have. So they then sits there and you can watch it, module 1, module 2. Module 3, and it goes up to 10 different sort of Qt modules, and then finally the Qt finishes installing, and then finally the application grinds into action, and it's something like 2 or 3 minutes before anything happens on screen. And then once you start running it, it's actually a pretty slow and clunky experience, and you tap a panel, and about 4 or 5 seconds later something happens. I have to say, I was very, very underwhelmed. I know you wrote a piece on it, Ewan, so what was your take on this whole tragedy of errors?
Well, first of all, I don't think it's a tragedy of errors. Yes, the first time you install a Qt application, it's going to jump online and download the relevant Qt installations. I think that's a smart decision. Otherwise, you're going to ask people to go up to the internet, to go and find the sys files themselves, to go and try and install the application separately, and then come back and do the application install again. The fact that Nokia have wrapped this all up in one click, okay, it takes a couple of minutes the first time you put in a Qt application, but the next Qt application will not have that step. So, yes, there is a slight overhead on first install. How else are they going to do it? Until Qt is installed in the factory and in the firmware, it has to be shipped out in the installation.
Couldn't they have just done it as a web runtime, though, that you and like many other Nokia apps of the last year or two, just do it with web runtime if they want lots of big HTML and multimedia panels?
But at the same time, they also want to have Qt out there as an option, and they need to get the Qt runtime out there. Yes, they could have made this application as a web runtime, but does that help push the story of Qt? Does that help get the runtime out there? Does that help developers see that it's a viable application to use? It doesn't. I think Qt was the right choice to go here, and the fact that they can use the Qt installer, it's exactly the same as, and I dread to say this, but it's exactly the same as when we had to put the OPL runtime back on ER6.
Rafe.
Yeah, just to give the technical details here, it's the Qt smart installer that causes that 11 megabyte download, and the only other option would be, as Ewan suggests, including the runtime within the sys file, which would make every single sys file, you know, 15 megabytes plus. So I think actually they're taking the right approach here, and really what's to be celebrated here is that the legacy devices or the old devices are being able to support Qt at all, and that's a pretty significant achievement. I think in this case, you know, you ask why they're using Qt. Well, they're doing it because this is a kind of a promotional thing from Nokia, and they want to push their new technologies. You know, in one sense, this is a way of encouraging people to download Qt, and when they subsequently download a Qt application, it'll obviously be a lot smaller because they won't need to download any of the extra bits. Obviously, it's not an ideal experience first off. I'd also say that on the Symbian One devices, Qt has much better performance and web runtime, so it wouldn't really be possible to do the same kind of big web panels and multimedia interactivity that you've got in the X-Factor application with web runtime, as I think is perhaps being best demonstrated by the rather sluggish performance of the betas of social messaging on the Symbian One devices and in other web runtime applications as well. So yes, I can see, you know, it creates a pretty nasty experience the first time round, but I actually think, you know, I agree with Ewan here, this is something to be applauded. It's the right thing, even if it's creating a one-off nasty.
What is nasty, unfortunately, is the application itself. It can constantly ask for which internet connection to use. It doesn't remember it. It has huge taskbars popping up whenever information gets loaded and cached on the screen. A lot of that could be done in the background. Orange Wednesday's application shows you how to do a Qt application with multimedia, pulling down information and creating a nice user experience. The X Factor application just makes me think, yeah, this is the X Factor. You have to wait a long time, and then you get 30 seconds of, oh my God, is that it?
David.
I was just going to ask a quick question. Kind of coming from a Linux background, I mean, I'm used to when I try and install an application, any prerequisites of other software platforms, for example, Qt, are automatically installed. Riff, do you think the OviStore client could fulfill a similar function?
Well, it could do, but what the Qt Smart Installer is exactly that Linux model of dependencies. It will say what the developer has to do is say, I need this Qt module, and this Qt module, and he'll go, right, let me check. Right, those are already on your phone. Go ahead and install. If they're not installed on the phone, it will retrieve them off the web and install them for you. So mm-hmm. I think it makes far more sense to put that in the installer rather than in the OviStore client, which is really just a distribution mechanism.
I still say they should have put in just a simple splash screen saying, dear customer, we've noticed you haven't got Qt on your phone. This will take 3 or 4 minutes. Please be patient. You only have to do this once. And then thereafter, all our future apps written in this will just run much, much faster. I just think a bit more information to the user rather than just force them to sit there staring at loading screens might have helped.
But then you'd have to explain to the end user what Qt is.
And you'd have to have a dialogue screen. And of course, that's actually built into the Sys installer. So what you could have done is popped up a dialogue which would have, as Ewan suggests, pretty much no meaning for anybody. I do appreciate that it is a bit of a problem here, but there is no ideal solution. And as I said, the fact that these devices support Qt at all, and can we just all remember that it's Qt and not Qt, please?
Steve looks at David and Ewan sternly.
Yes, absolutely.
Ewan wonders why Steve is looking at somebody on an audio podcast.
Okay, thank you, Ewan. The point being, of course, that I actually think the fact that these older devices are going to be able to support Qt is quite significant, because of course you can create your Qt application for the N8 and all the new devices and have it work on all the older stuff with absolutely no concerns whatsoever. And you know, that's the big point here, able to access sort of the 50 million Symbian One devices that are out there, and for a developer it's all about, you know, reach, and so that's why it's important.
Okay, thanks, Rafe. We're going to have to cut it short there, guys, because we're running right out of time. We haven't plugged our various URLs and accounts for quite a while. So just before we go, just if you want to run around the table and give your Twitter accounts, I'll start off with Steve Litchfield. Don't forget the T in Litchfield. Rafe, you've got two accounts to plug.
Yes, I can plug my own personal account, which is at Rafe Blanford, and also the All About Symbian one, which is at AAS.
David?
On Twitter, I'm unsurprisingly at David Gilson, and I'm the same in real life.
But you and Spence is slightly different.
Yes, I'm going to suggest that you all follow File of Facts on Twitter this week, as opposed to me, because you've been listening to this podcast long enough, you've already made the decision to follow me or not. So I'd recommend following at File of Facts to find out how information is done when there's no silicon around.
There we go. Find out everything about the site at allaboutsymbian.com. Thanks ever so much for listening. We will catch you all next week. And it's goodbye from me, and everybody else can just shout out goodbye now.
Goodbye now.
Bye, everyone.
Goodbye, everybody. And please keep checking the site, because there's going to be a lot more post-Nokia World content to come. We've got some great interviews lined up and, of course, more device previews. So keep watching this space. And I'm going to say goodbye myself, because I get to do that because I'm editing the podcast afterwards. Goodbye, everybody.
Which means you'll never hear this bit.
Or this bit.
Obviously. Unless he leaves it in just to annoy us.
Or the loud hum. And the echo. Echo. Echo.
See, if we had a duck, you wouldn't get that joke. Ducks don't have echoes.